you look at things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff, and that there's so much that is happening now that we're going to talk about, and then so much of the history we have is because
All right, welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We are here.
How you doing, brother?
I'm going to try not to talk about how I'm going to Israel next week, but I'm going to Israel next week, Joe.
You couldn't wait. Like,
I am pumped. It has been 2.5 years. I had 2 trips canceled. I was invited to come back and go with the organization that first took me, Eagle's Wings, and I get to be there with 25 other pastors and Bishop Stearns, and it's just going to be a fantastic trip from start to finish. It's a packed trip, so the schedule is not your typical church trip where you have a lot of downtime, you kind of relax. Like, we are on the bus early and we go till 7-8 o'clock at night. There's not a lot of downtime. Like, they line stuff up, they have speakers and everything, and it's awesome. But it's a go kind of trip.
Sweet.
And it's going to be fun.
So happy for you, man.
Yeah. And it's going to be beautiful weather. And yeah, I'm just pumped. Pray for my wife. She will have all 4 kids for for about 11 and a half days, 12 days. And I will rush home to her at the end of this. And she's like, I get a vacation after this, right? I get to go somewhere.
Part of the plan. Yeah.
So it's going to be good. How's Joe's world?
Good. Yeah. Nice and busy. You know, just when you think you've delved in all the places that you can improve and were held, like every once in a while you notice one that you've neglected and you think, oh crap, I wasn't paying attention there. How many more of those are out there? Yeah. So that's been my pursuit lately, is trying to dig up some areas that, you know, need some attention.
Where's Gus going next?
I think not really many places until we get to, I think we're going to do a Florida trip, and then we're going to go out west to California for
$1 million. $1 million. You get 5.5 miles to the gallon, and oh man.
Yeah. That's not a lot of miles.
No, not the inflation. Those miles that, that's like 1 mile a gallon, you know, last summer.
Yes, it was. It was not this expensive.
Wow. Yeah. So you're going to go California and Grand Canyon, all that sort of stuff.
For sure. Yeah,
nice. That's cool. What's going on in Youngstown studio, computer? What sort of announcements, anything on the horizon?
I mean, everything's growing. I mean, we partnered with a bunch of small businesses that we're going to help them add jobs. So like my whole goal in this area was to just keep adding on
more jobs.
Higher paying jobs, more lucrative, and help people find prosperity. And we've been able to do that like hand over fist. It's been amazing.
So what's a small business that you can tell everybody that you're partnering with? Is there?
So there's one of them is a detailing service, and these come all around every once in a while where somebody begins their career with practicing whatever craft it is. And then they build a company around them, and then they're sole practitioner, and then they are trapped because they can't break away and run the business because they have to do the production work.
Yeah.
And so those are my favorite ones because they've mastered it. Like they've proved it out that there's a demand.
And they've come from the bottom up.
Yeah. It's great. And so all they need is someone to stand by them, help them hire a couple people in, because they're petrified that they finally started making some money. And then I come along and say, let's hire some people and give them all the money. And they're like, wait a minute.
So what's the name of the company?
It's Wizard Detailing.
Okay.
And so I got another one coming in later that hasn't been signed off on yet, but that's another prospect. Okay. So these are cool. All I had to do was mention that I do this, and people have been lined up every Wednesday forever
now. Very cool. Are there any businesses that you won't touch?
You know what? My specialty is not bars and restaurants, but thankfully I know someone who's is. Yeah. And so I lean on him to tackle those guys.
Yeah. No, that's so good. I think the thing I'm most looking forward to coming up this, summer, the kids are like just pumped right now for life. And we've been having some really cool, mom and dad experiences with the kids. And so we're planning a couple of things we're toying with, but we really would love to get down to, Kentucky, Cincinnati area for the ARC experience. We've had a couple people come back and tell us how cool that is. I don't know if that'll happen till the fall. But we're going to the beach with my family, and I'm pumped for salt water, vitamin C.
I'm telling you, man. When you're away from it for a while, that's like all you crave, and there's something about it.
When you hear those waves crashing on the shore, you could sit there all day.
It's for sure.
It's wonderful, wonderful stuff. So recently I've been navigating two or three interesting things leadership wise, but then I've read a couple of books, and surprise, I read a couple of books. And I think one of them has really impressed me to So there's this idea in our culture about pressure, pressure to excel at a certain rate, pressure to climb to the top, pressure in, you know, all right, if you're engaged, when are you getting married? If you're married, when are you having kids? Like pressure to move seasons in life. Right. All right, you got your degree. Where are you going to work? What business are you going to start? There's always like everybody's always pushed and pressured for the next. And this one book I read was on Sabbath, and we've talked about time and, you know, the idea of managing our time well and creating space. But I want to talk about this idea of pressure, because we live in a high pressured society, whether that's political pressure, whether that's, like I said, there's seasonal pressure, mom and dad pressure. There's pressure on all sides. How does Joe manage pressure?
So I think that I changed the word. Like, all healthy pressures are more boundaries than they are pressures. So if I'm, you know, if I'm moving slow, I question whether or not I should be moving faster. Mm. And if I'm moving fast, I should figure out if I should slow down. So it's, you're never at a sweet spot. It's always pushing yourself one way or the other and constantly asking the question where you should be. Now, the pressure that I think you were alluding to, like, you ever see your peers, they start referring to themselves as old.
Yeah.
And you don't know really where that's coming from, but that's like the what next is what you're referring to. Like, yeah. why do you all of a sudden tell your body it's time to start checking out and to start decaying?
Yeah.
Me, I try to act like immature as I possibly can. I'm going in the other direction.
Well, it's true. They say that, you know, age, so much of it is attached to deactivity. Like when people deactivate themselves from life and stop doing those things, well, you know, it causes a little discomfort. It causes a little, you know, I'm finding even, you know, for myself, like with my kids and stuff, you know, I was out shooting baskets with Graham the other day. I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, I used to go out every day and play basketball or throw football or whatever. And yeah, I'm 37, but I'm like, you choose inertia. And an object of rest stays at rest, right, until an object in motion, you know, or an outside force acts upon it. And sometimes you have to be that outside force for yourself. My wife's doing a 5K in 2 weeks. She's super pumped. She signed up for the Cleveland 5K. She's been getting up every morning religiously, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock. And the other day outside, she ran a 5K without stopping for the first time. She's very excited. And that's, you know, awesome. She's got 2 weeks and she's going to do this 5K. Now she's a little unhappy with me because she signed up for it before I was going to Israel. And so my kids will be there. Some of our friends will be there. And my brother and his wife are going to make sure that our kids are there and, you know, have signs and all that sort of stuff. I will be on FaceTime, I'm sure, with somebody as she does that. But, you know, she is so excited for this, and this has become a real lifestyle thing. But what I found for me is we were so comfortable before she started training for the 5K. Like the culture of our house was so much more like, all right, well, we'll sit and we'll watch Netflix, or we'll play games with the kids. And not that it's wrong to play games, and not that it's wrong to watch Netflix. But as my wife has started, this outside force has started acting upon the inertia that is in our home.
Yes.
I'm like, you know, at night she wants to go to bed a little earlier. So, cause she's waking up earlier. So then I'm waking up earlier. And so there's certain things here that I'm like, oh, this is kind of good. And then at night, after she runs in the morning, a lot of times she wants to go for a walk. So now we're walking 2 and 3 miles just to stretch. She wants to stretch her legs out. And I'm like, wow, all right. Now I'm doing 2 and 3. We did 3.5 miles the other night. And I got done, I was like, man, that felt pretty good. Like, you know, it was a lot of fun with the kids, good sunshine, all of that. And I'm walking 3.5 miles. We're not like, or, you know, right, falling over dead. But before, we wouldn't have done that. We would have just sat inside. We would have had dinner. We would have laid on the couch. We would have read a book. We would have, and again, all those things are fine. But I'm finding so much more life outside of the inertia. And I don't necessarily feel, it's good pressure.
Yeah. Like, as kids, remember, you would go and play outside all the time because your peers were outside playing all the time, because that's 100%. what you did. So now your peers are barbecuing and beers. And so like they slow down. And then so you just join them because you want to be sociable with the people. But it takes a catalyst like what your wife's doing to like shake all that up. And then sometimes that you deviate. And now you don't have a lot in common with the people, right, who are watching Netflix and want to sit around and relax.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, there have been a couple of shows that were like, oh, we want to watch that. And now it's like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4. Like, man, when are we going to find time to do this? And because we filled it up with other, absolutely, stuff. And so other people are talking about it like, I haven't gotten around to that show yet.
That's right.
And part of me's like, part of me feels like, am I missing out? But then part of me's like, no, like I'm really enjoying,
that's right,
this extra stuff. And I think it's good. You know, you have people that struggle with pressure, whether it's good pressure or bad pressure, they cave to it. They can't handle it. They'll run in the other direction. They're the flight people. They go internal when there's pressure. Are you a fight, or does your inner warrior rise up if the pressure comes, or are you?
You know, I'm really good at pressure, but because I became good at it because I'm a one percenter of those 5 yard runs mm-hmm. instead of so much riding on one throw. I give myself chances to come up short, and my world kind of tolerates that because, you know, you end up winning more when you have more chances at it than if it's hinged on one throw.
Yeah. I just think to deal with maybe the seasonal pressures, people go into the seasons, whether it's engagement, marriage, having babies, whether it's, well, I'm a, you know, junior partner and I'm a full part, like the career corporate ladder climb up. People feel those pressures, but all of those pressures are exterior to them. None of those are interior. Like there's almost a sense of people that I'm late. You know, I've watched Sam and I got married very young, 24 and 21. Everybody said, "Oh, you're so young to get married." Da da da. And I watch some of my friends now that are in their late 30s getting married for the first time, and I know we're so late to getting married and stuff like that. And I'm like, who says that you're late?
Yeah, people can't help themselves. They say crap like that pretty regularly, and it's like a pre-programmed thing. I don't know why it happens. It's almost like the you're getting old part. Right. Where's that come from?
Yeah, yeah, and we almost self-identify and self-box ourselves in with, I don't know if they're social norms or social cues, but for me, I try and catch those things for myself and go, oh, I want to fight against that.
Here's a practice. I forbade this in my house, and this worked really well. It was unintentional, but it had some great consequences, where anytime anybody says in my house, have to, I cock my head to the side and say, have to? Really? Explain this. And so it's one thing if you want to go do something and you make mm-hmm. preparations for it, but to feel like something in the world is making you do something, it's an illusion, first of all, because if you know, there's not a birthday party or wedding or anything that you have to, that I won't sit down on the couch, be stubborn and say, watch, I'll show you how much you don't have to do that.
Yeah, the have to versus get to is huge. Especially for me, you know, dealing with volunteers, people have that spiritual pressure. They feel guilty. Like people give out of guilt. They serve out of guilt. And I hate that because it's never a good motivation. Guilt and shame are horrible motivations. Like they always leave you more empty and depleted. And so when people do that and they're like, well, I have to serve, I'm like, please don't. Well, yeah, but nobody else will do it. I'm like, we'll find somebody. Like,
right.
Because your attitude is not going to be the same. Your joy is not going to be the same. Everybody around you is going to know you're there because you have to. And who wants to work for a have to? Like,
right. But that's the practice that you get in when you emulate the people that you see happening is you become that because of those have to's. Well, I won't fit in if I challenge it. I don't want to sit around on the deck tonight, or, you know, I don't want to go to this place because it costs a lot of money, but everybody's doing it. And it's the same crap that your mom told you about. Like, you know, be your own thing, decide your own thing and pay the consequence on both sides.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it costs you either way.
It does.
That's the whole thing. And I would much rather live in a space where I get to do things. And sometimes you have to convince yourself. You know, my wife right now, the thing that she keeps saying to herself when she doesn't want to run is I still have mobility. I get to. There are other people out there that would kill to be able to walk, and I have the ability to run. And just switching that perspective, and sometimes you're saying it to convince yourself, but to understand you have that privilege. You know, when people complain about their job, like, oh, I have to go to work. No, I get to go to work. There are a whole bunch of people that can't work or don't have jobs or don't have the right job. You get to go to work. Like, what a privilege.
Do you have any moments that stick out for you that where you had an ability and all of a sudden it was taken away, but it's seared in your brain that had you taken advantage of it before that moment, it would have been a game changer? I think I'll give you mine first. Yeah, yeah. So when I was training for one of the 5Ks, the Bahamas, one of the early ones where I was trying to break that 30 minute, I had all this opportunity to do it. And I was like, I procrastinate. And it got to be a couple of months and I got a sinus infection and I got some respiratory problems. And then I couldn't run. Right. In that moment, I thought, you had solid 3 months of perfect health and you pissed it away. Yeah, and now you're going to serve out this deal. You're going to have like 2 weeks to try to put this together. Aren't you stupid? Kind of a moment, you know?
You know, I certainly have some of those. The thing that jumps out to my head as you're talking about that is, as pastor, a lot of times people will come to me and want me to clean up a mess or want me to fix something in their life or their family, or they want to come complain about something. And I will often say to them, your poor planning is not my emergency.
Exactly.
And the fact is, like, you had months to deal with this, and heck, you had time to deal with this, and now you're showing up and you're going, Pastor, please pray for me. I'll pray for you, but you squandered 6 months. Like, it'd be God's grace and mercy if he shows up and takes care of it at this point. And you hate to say that in that moment, but those are the things that are running through my head. Like, you know,
but those are the most impactful things, because you remember what you did to yourself in the moment. If you take responsibility for it, then you can learn from it.
But, you know, I can remember having conversations with my dad. You know, he would be going in for a health procedure or an issue, and he's a 500-pound diabetic who didn't take care of himself. And he'd be like, pray for me. I'm like, I can, but, you know, yes. Can God do anything? 100%. Can he step in and intervene? I believe that with full throttle. But, like, there's some personal responsibility. And at some level, like, he's not responsible to show up and be a miracle for you when you squandered your health in that regard. And I know that stings for people to hear. It's true for me too. I'm not the beacon of health by any means. And I'm working on me every day. But at the end of the day, like, you know, so many people are like, oh, they kind of count on the miracle instead of, well, I've actually been given this gift of health and movement and the ability to do some of these things. You can take it out of the realm of health, and we could talk about, you know, family. You know, I would get parents that would come to me with teenagers when I was a youth pastor, and they're like, Pastor, my relationship, can you just pray that the Lord would fix this? I'm like, you've had 14 years to make this right. Like, I can pray. Yes. Can the divine do anything? Absolutely. But we have 14 years of history here. I'll pray, but we probably got about 14 years worth of work to reverse some of this stuff.
Right.
Now, God can speed things up and certain things come into play. I don't want to discount that, but I feel like often, especially in spiritual context, people position themselves to rely on the miracle instead of the discipline and the character that it takes to do it right, and to make the changes they need to make. And I'm guilty in the spaces where I'm guilty.
And that's why, if you think of it as those boundaries, that you know you're never going to be on center, and those boundaries keep you positioned as central as you possibly can. Where people are creating pressures, think of it like when you misbehave, you get a 2x4 to the side of the face. Right? That doesn't have to be
right,
but that's the motivational pressures with that guilt and you know those shame things. You wait until it's painful, you get hit with it, and like, oh, I should be over there, when you don't have to wait until there's pain.
Yeah, I read a great book several years ago called Change Before You Have To, by this guy, Rob Ketterling. He's pastor in Minnesota, pastor a huge church. And he tells the story in there, and I'm not going to do it justice. He tells it much better. But, you know, he basically had a health scare with he had a minor heart attack or whatever. And he was not necessarily morbidly obese, but he was overweight. And, you know, he's a younger guy, high stress environment, was dealing with people and their problems all the time. And just had this spot where, like, he's like, I have to change now. And out of that season, now, if you looked at him, you'd be like, you had a heart attack. I mean, he's skinny, he's, you know, real healthy and stuff like that. And, you know, there are a couple of humorous stories around there that he tells. But ultimately, you know, the book is all about, like, you know, how do you find the pain motivation before you have the pain to motivate you to do it? Because everybody waits for the heart attack, so to speak, before they're like, oh crap, I got to get this together.
Exactly.
Or the spouse to walk out the door and be like, I'm done. And then they're like, oh, all right, I got to fix this, I'm so sorry. Or the kid to be like, I'm never speaking to you again. And it's like, all right, well, we got to spend more time together. And it's like, but it's too late at that point.
Right.
So we have to figure out how to do the right things at first. And I'm a huge proponent of this. And I, you know, maybe I don't talk about it enough from a platform standpoint at church, but there's a lot to be said for, like, health and mental health and all of those things. And as great as it is for the healing services and the miracle crusades and all of that, those are powerful. But there's also this other side of the coin where, you know, if we were maybe getting some counseling, if we were in some healthy spaces, if we were building healthy relationships, if we develop some healthy habits, maybe we don't need the miracle
before the crisis. Yeah, right. Absolutely. And there's a little bit of danger. You know, even in, you know, big law of attraction person. And so I don't really put a lot of energy into bad things that can happen and get focused on them. But I have to take a hypothetical, a potentiality, something that I'm not bought into is a thing out there. I'm going to die one day, right? Yep. Not going to live every day like thinking, oh, this is it, right? No Eeyore for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm like, if that were to happen right now, let me try to make that scenario as best as I possibly can, put in a little envelope, mail it out. I have a certain amount of preparation. relative to everyone else who's going to let it be a surprise when it's a known, like Christmas is going to come up, right? You're going to spend money.
Yep.
Oh my goodness, how did I get in debt? It's one of those things where we don't want to make it into a bad thing, right? But we want to have as much preparation as we can afford to make it a better than doing nothing.
Yeah. And it's hard because you're right. You don't want to play out the bad scenarios, but unfortunately, most people aren't motivated enough by the good. They need the sting
exactly.
to push them forward. They need the pinch. They need the pressure to go forward. You know, I think about death and I want to, there's a poem that I absolutely love and I've used it when I preached. Let's see here. I got it right here. It's by Chief Tecumseh and it's a longer poem, but the last three lines in it say this. It says, "When it comes your time to die, be not like those whose hearts are filled with the fear of death, so that when their time comes, they weep and pray for a little more time to live their lives over again in a different way. Sing your death song and die like a hero going home." And I love that that line because it's true. Death is a motivating factor for people. And it's amazing when people get the cancer diagnosis, when they get that stuff, all of a sudden they start doing things that are like, people are like, wow, that's totally out of character for them because they're like, well, I have 6 weeks or I have 6 months and like, I have to fill this with life. And it's like, you might only have tomorrow. Like right. You might only have tomorrow. So like, why don't you fill today with life? And I think that's reminds me of a scripture, Joe. Get to use our button. In Ecclesiastes, Solomon says, it's better to go to a house of mourning than a house of feasting, for death is the destiny of every man, and the living should take this to heart. And kind of wrapping that around, he's like, you know, you can go to the party house, and you can go and have fun and all of that, but it's actually more sober for you, and you'll live more intentionally around death time. When you go to a funeral for a loved one, you're always reevaluating yourself. When I do a funeral for somebody at the church, I'm often thinking like, man, like when it's my turn to lay in that box, what will people say? What will my obituary read? You know, there's a bunch of kind of anecdotes around that, but that motivating factor, that pressure to live life well and full, death is great for that.
Yeah. But there's other ones too. Like you can take something, for instance, your neighbor's house gets robbed and everybody buys an alarm because all of a sudden they realize that was a possibility.
That's when the ADT guy comes around.
Exactly. And he's like, hey. Right. But you know, you can wait for one example and start like hypotheticaling a lot of things. Is that a word? Hypotheticaling?
I don't know. We can make it up. We're allowed.
All right. So, but you can start going around and saying, what if that were to happen? Mm. You know, how would I react if that were me and I were in that box or I was in the hospital or whatever, like how would I react on that day? And you can go around not having been in the chaos and the crisis and the peril with the same kind of motivating factor. You could say, I'm blessed that I'm not there. Yeah. So let's make preparations.
Yeah. And preparations are important. You know, they get kind of a bad rap, you know, when you talk about preppers, right? People often think of like doomsday and Y2K. And did you prepare for Y2K? Did you have canned goods?
Yeah, you did. Yeah. Everybody does. Come on. You're insane if you don't. I might have some stuff, iodine tablets in my basement now.
I'm with you, bro. But the truth is, right, you know, we look at that and we go, oh, that's crazy. And it's only crazy. I saw a meme on Facebook that said, you know, everybody made fun of Noah until it started to rain. I mean, he was building a boat in the middle of the desert. But then when it started to rain and it didn't stop raining, everybody went, I think that guy's onto something.
Yeah.
And I think that's true about preparations in our life, whether it's, you know, preparing for a new season with our kids, whether it's preparing, you know, a new season health wise, we want to do stuff, those preparations that we make, or even preparing for a rainy day, putting 6 months of funds in the bank so that God forbid you lose your job. You're running around going, what are we going to do?
But this isn't binary. So it's not like you use the extremes here, right? I'm saying if you were the prepper that went off the deep end, I would be ushering you back to the center. So you didn't have to worry so much too. That the pressure of the negative will get you just as much idiocy as none at all.
Yeah. Well, but, and, you know, biblically, I think of Noah, I think of Joseph, you know, Joseph goes to Pharaoh and Pharaoh has this dream. Joseph's able to tell him the dream and interpret it. And ultimately the dream was, hey, there's going to be these years of famine and these years of plenty. The years of plenty are going to come before the years of famine. So we better save up. And Pharaoh puts Joseph in charge. They save up the food. They survive the famine. You know, beautiful story. But again, it was all about making preparations for stuff that was going to come. Now, maybe the famine doesn't come. Maybe you misheard the dream. But worst case, you got a bunch of silos of grain. You know, and that's the way I kind of look at whether it's money, food, whatever. Like, yeah, are there things coming? You know, everybody right now, it's inflation, recession. You know, everybody's running around. And I'm going like, you know, I always look at it this way. Like, if God's not God in this economy, he's not God at all.
Right.
And I know, yes, have the rules changed a little bit or the interest rates a little higher? Sure. Do we maybe need to be a little, you know, maybe not as bullish on that and maybe a little more reserved on some things? Yeah. But at the end of the day, like, the financial principles don't change. And yes, well, the interest rates go and well, the, you know, everybody's screaming about this is going to happen and that's going to happen and the real estate market and crypto and you know, all that stuff. And I'm just sitting here going like, okay, because I'm not tied to any of that. Well, yes, you are. It's going to cost you more for eggs and it's going to cost you more. I understand that. I see the grocery shopping bill. We sit down and do our budget every week, but my heart's not attached to that. Like that. Yes. Are we going to have to navigate some things differently? Sure. But my provision doesn't come from the money. Money is a resource, not the source.
Let me give you a new perspective. Let's slide a camera angle here. Because remember, like, we're not uniform. Like, not everybody is making the same preparations. So the condition slid to someone else's advantage. It has to slide away from your advantage. So when you're like, let's just say you were holding a bunch of debt and all of a sudden interest rates go or inflation goes way up and your debt becomes less valuable. And you're like, you got into debt by just sitting there. Well, the guy that's holding cash, it sucks for, and the guy that's holding debt, it's great for, right? But if it just stayed the same, right, then it would be stuck and you wouldn't have entropy and you wouldn't have movement. You wouldn't have all these things. So that's the thing. Like, no, being human means that it's going to slide away from you and to you many, many times in your life. So if you're staying towards center and moving with it, right, that's why there's a boundary on both sides. You're always going to need something that pushes you one direction and the other to stay on center.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I feel like right now people are feeling the pressure of the narrative of recession and all of that stuff. What are some things that you do that some of our listeners can do to deal with the pressure, the financial pressure? Maybe they're feeling their dollars not going as far. I mean, I get it. You know, you used to be able to go to the grocery store with $150 and now you got to go with $200 for the same amount of groceries. You know, people are feeling that in their wallet. I don't want to discount that. So how does Joe practically deal with, all right, this pressure is coming from the outside. Some of it's actualize, some of it's there, we feel it, but a lot of it's in our mind. So how do you navigate that? What's some things I can do?
This is going to be a little bit of a cop out, but this is something that 99% of the people are doing the wrong thing. Okay, and I learned when I was a kid, like, I watched my family get torn apart because of finances, because my dad had one job and he lost it and he struggled getting another one. One job, right? Yeah. So I was like, I'm going to go get 10 jobs. Yep. So that way no one can take away everything. They can only take away 10%. So diversification and spreading out all of your liabilities and spreading out all of your, you know, your incomes and revenues is the way that I've, you know, because one part of the economy collapses, right? You're like, oh, 10% went away. But then at the same time, something over here goes up.
Yep.
And I'm like, I stayed balanced because I had more than just one thing.
Yep.
Over-investing. What it is.
Yeah. So for the average person out there who's got one job, how do they develop a second stream of income? What's a way they can do
that? So I met with a guy the other day where he's 20 years into his career. He's totally bought in. The brand was completely built around him. He's getting up there in age. And so the company is starting to build the brand over the next guy. And he's watching his, you know, what he's attached to and what he loves doing and all his passions go, right?
Yeah, right.
Because he's watching himself retire against his will. So I said, it doesn't take a whole lot to take a zero brand, nothing over here, and start building something on the side that you can give birth to. And in a moment, there's a little life raft. It could be a life raft that's about this big over here, but you know it's there. And in a moment's notice, you can keep nurturing it into a bigger thing. What usually happens is someone will give that little bit of attention, and this will be like a little bit more toxic than it used to be. And this will be your love and your passion. And you'll watch this thing and it'll outperform the other gig and it'll start competing for time. And you'll be like, oh, dude, by the way, I'm not loving this one right now. I need to go to part-time so I could spend some more time with my baby. And then you can invent baby after baby after baby.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's so good, because I think a lot of people think, oh, you know, I'm just so tired after work. And, you know, I get there at, you know, I do the 9-to-5 thing, and it's and people don't recognize You know, I hear people all the time, like 9 to 5, oh, it's so tiring. And I get you have kids and I get you got to come home. But like you have like 7 to midnight where you could like work on something for you, whether that's I want to do photography or I want to sell stuff on eBay or fill in the blank, that you don't need a storefront. You don't need brick and mortar. You don't need support. You can just start doing on your own. I have a buddy from Bible school that he's an athletic director at a Christian school. And he teaches the Bible classes and a couple different things. But on the side, he does Uber and he does sells on eBay. He probably makes like $3,000 to $5,000 a month selling stuff on eBay. So on Saturday mornings, he'll go to garage sales and he'll go to thrift stores for a couple hours because he likes to do that anyway.
Right.
And now he's kind of got his, you know, niche. He knows what he's looking for. He knows what he can. Oh, I can get that for $1. I know I can sell that for $35 on eBay. He's got a good eBay store. He's got one room in his house dedicated to his stuff and he's got clothes and everything else. And he gets some really cool stuff.
And he knows if anything happened to his normal gig, he could do that in 2 seconds.
He was in between jobs and he was able to, he left the one spot where he was at. He had about 2 months. He just drove Uber a bunch and tried to sell more stuff on eBay, started going to thrift stores and stuff like that. And that sustained him until he walked in the door at the other job. So it totally makes sense what you're saying. And the internet, man, having a phone in your hand, I mean, that changes the game because, I mean, you can start a business right from there. There's so many things from Amazon to eBay that you can do tomorrow and make $50 or even Facebook Marketplace. I mean, how much stuff has your wife sold on Facebook Marketplace?
She's a good model.
She's
on
great
this too.
At that. Yeah.
So I talk to these people that you know, we talk about I'm uncomfortable in my current position and whatever. Do you know how many people, when I ask them like what they do, like what their skill set and one thing, that how many of them are outside what they actually do, what they would like to be doing? Hmm. Most of them are doing it because, you know, it pays the bills or anything. But what they'd really be doing is X, Y, and Z, and they're not doing anything in those departments. So I would always say, like, list out, you know, do your pros and cons. Don't try to like think of this and someone's going to read it and judge you based on one. Say like if tomorrow you lost it, nobody was in charge of it, you could just write down what you think you might want to do in a perfect world. And then just start investing in some of those things. And you'll see that some of that stuff you could breathe life into and you can actually do it as a little side hustle.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely brilliant. And I think more people, particularly the millennials, are thinking that way. But I'm telling you, there's, you know, a 60-year-old truck driver out there right now that's like, tired of driving truck, you know, I'm tired of being away from the family. And like, there's literally, you know, if you will take, you know, an hour on YouTube, you can learn how to do some of these things that we're talking about and start making a side income. And who knows, maybe in 6 months or a year, if you hustle at it and you work at it and you watch, you know, you're in the truck, put the YouTube video and teach yourself a new skill so that you don't have to be on the road.
Fortunately, culture is a little bit more adoptive of this. So here's how the conversation goes down. I'm driving truck and I don't like it. What do you know how to do? I love building birdhouses, right? So why don't you do some part? No, nobody's going to buy my birdhouse. That's the way that it goes.
Yeah.
Like, no, let's try it. Let's build one. Let me sell it. You just go work out building it. I'll worry about putting it in other people's hands and we'll start off there. So a lot of cooperation where I have to fill in some of the insecurities that culture delivered last time where it's not good enough and it's not fast enough.
Well, and not even that, like just watching TikTok. There's one guy I follow on TikTok. I'm completely enamored with TikTok. He builds soccer balls. That's literally what he does. And it's fascinating because the last one I just watched him do, he took the cleats of a particular player that he wore all throughout his career. And he went and I'm sure he gobbled them up on eBay, bought these old style cleats. And then he cut the squares out of the leather from the shoe and he turned it into a soccer ball.
How cool is that?
Super cool. It was like 1,080 stitches, but he recorded himself on TikTok. He's got, you know, a gajillion followers. He's getting paid by TikTok. And all he did was set up his little recorder and he made the thing. And then he went back and edited this piece, edited that piece, took, you know, whatever, half an hour to edit this video on his phone. He didn't buy any special equipment or any of that sort of stuff. And then he just does a little voiceover saying, this is how many pieces, this is how many stitches I did. And I'm watching, I'm like, that's so cool. I would buy that soccer ball. And then I'm sure he turns around and sells the soccer ball.
For sure.
There's another guy that loves woodworking. And so he is cutting out the state. So he's got this map projected on the wall and he literally just sets up his phone and he's got the state trees of every state and he's cutting out the state shape from their state tree. Now here's the crazy part. He started doing this with the first couple and I'm sure he had access to the wood. You know, he has a wood shop and that's what he does. And he's a carpenter and he starts making these first couple and people start following this video And now he gets people mailing him the wood of their state tree. So he's not even having to buy the wood.
Wow.
And tens of thousands of people are watching him cut the shape out, talk about, well, this type of tree, it's a soft wood, and this is what it does. And then he's got this beautiful map that he's going to sell for a ton of money. Because Sam was like, man, that's so cool. When it, he's got two more states left. And every couple of days, I'm like, oh, is he going to put a new state up? And so, like, you know, the idea of TikTok and YouTube and Instagram can take a hobby. You know, in his case, yeah, he's a carpenter, but take something like, oh, you know what, I'm going to cut this thing out. It's going to take me 20 minutes to cut this state out of wood, especially some of the square ones that didn't take him that long. And then I'm going to sit here, I'm going to rub some oil on it, and then I'm going to voice over, well, this is a cypress tree, and it, you know, they decided it was the state tree in 1908 or whatever, and then I'm going to put it up on the map, and that's going to be my TikTok video. And TikTok's going to pay me, you know, I think it's like one penny for every, you know, 1,000 views or something like that. But when you have, you know,
billions
of views, like it pays you. So I'm getting paid from that. You know, people are asking to buy the map. You know, I could sell it on Etsy or I could sell it somewhere. So, you know, the options are unlimited. We often stop ourselves. You know, there are tons of chefs and culinary people on TikTok right now that just go around and review food, and they're going to their favorite restaurant that they're going to eat at anyway, and they pull out the phone in their car and they sit there and they're like, wow, this tastes like crap. I get, you know, like whatever. Right. This is way too spicy. Don't waste your money here. And everybody's like, oh, I like this video. You know, they're just being themselves. And right. That to me is the amazing part in all this is, you know, there's even this is one kid and his dad, and he calls it it's called a wondering what a Gen X thinks. And his dad's Gen X, and the kid comes in and will make some smart aleck comment, and then his dad will cuss him out or whatever, and like, and be the stereotypical Gen X. But the dad is just being who he is.
Right.
He's kind of this gruff biker looking guy, and he makes fun of his son for being a weak millennial, and they have this banter. Like a million followers, like people watching, waiting for, you know, what's the next thing they're going to get into an argument about. So there's so many avenues for what you're talking about to really create a niche for yourself. And you don't even have to go out to make money. Just go out to do something you love and just bring your phone along with you.
And just remember, the theme is, though, if you do that before you have to, like you make a bunch of those on your own time and on your own terms,
yep.
Then the have to's disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So what would happen if you had like five other things that you were excited about and you did your job because you're obligated over here, but you had like 10 things you'd rather be doing. Somebody came along and said, hey, we're going to ask you not to come in tomorrow. You'd be like, yeah, right. I get to go over here and do this.
Yeah. Well, everybody wants the lottery ticket, the magic lottery ticket. And you have the opportunity to maybe create that for yourself.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. It's really good. And that helps deal with when the pressure does come. Oh, you know what? That's fine. I'm just going to go over here. I'm just going to, you know, that faucet, I've only been running it at 50%. Well, let's turn it all the way on and see what happens. You know, if Youngstown computers close down tomorrow, Joe's going to go, well, let's turn the faucet on over here and over here.
Because I got 100 Youngstown computers right up here and I only have so much time.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, if you're feeling pressure, by all means, I will pray for you and we will pray for you. But there's so much you can do now so that when the pressure does come, you don't have to feel weighted down. So don't wait. Don't procrastinate. Do it now so that when the pressure does come, all you have to do is turn the faucet on.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.